Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Craft beers are all over. Wine, of course, is fine. But there has also been, in the last decade and more now, a new renaissance of almost gastronomic obsession with cocktails. Old standards, really done right, and highly inventive new concoctions. It's a cultural trend, shaken or stirred, not your grandmother's strawberry daiquiri. This hour on Point, America's new cocktail hour. You can join us on air or online with this conversation is always on. Have you become an aficionado of that perfect old-fashioned or newfangled cocktail? Tell us. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Comes to making drinks, there's one we all know how he wants it. Here's Sean Connery, 1964, Goldfinger.
Can I do something for you, Mr. Bond?
Just a drink. A martini, shaken, not stirred.
Of course, shaken, not stirred, Mr. Bond, but it gets a lot more complicated. Parks and Recreation, 2013, a group of guys head to Essence, a molecular mixology bar, for a bachelor party. When Ron Swanson, played by Nick Offerman, orders a whiskey, he gets more than he bargained for.
What's happening?
Oh, this is a sort of play on scotch. It's a whiskey-infused lotion.
Can I ask if this entire establishment is a practical joke of some kind?
If you don't like the scotch, they have a vodka that's served in the form of a flash of light.
God bless Ron Swanson. Okay, here we are. It's been a crazy week. It's been a rough week. Election stuff all over the place. It is 5 o'clock somewhere. So joining me now for this special On Point Cocktail Hour, first from Madison, Wisconsin, Andre Darlington, longtime food and drink writer, co-author of the hot off the presses, The New Cocktail Hour, the essential guide to handcrafted drinks, out next month. Andre Darlington in Madison, welcome to On Point. So great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And with the studio with me and with a cart full of material and equipment that we are going to put to work. Jackson Cannon, first co-owner and bar director of the popular Boston cocktail bar, The Hawthorne. His bar program was a James Beard Award semifinalist the last 3 years running. He's also bar director of the restaurant Eastern Standard. Knows his stuff. Jackson Cannon, welcome to On Point. Thanks
Very
for coming
happy
in.
To be here, Tom. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, it's a pleasure to do it, believe me. Also in the studio, Jenna Rycroft, principal bartender at the Boston restaurant Number 9 Park. Jenna, I'm so glad to have you right here. Thank you so much for bringing your talents into us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. First, can we just step back for a second? Andre, people have been talking about a cocktail renaissance for, I don't know, 10 years, maybe more than that now. Had cocktails gone away? What was the renaissance? What was the desert that the renaissance came out of?
Well, I think over time, through the 60s, 70s, and 80s, vodka was so ascendant that drinks had sort of descended into this miasma of fake mixes and vodkas and essentially highballs, which are just a liquor added to soda, which are essentially sort of the granola bar of drinks, right? It gets the job done efficiently, but it's not exactly an aesthetic experience. And then around the, you know, probably late 90s, early 2000s, we saw this return to fresh ingredients and attention to detail, kind of mirroring the organic food movement of the same time.
Jackson, maybe you kind of got into this realm around the same time the Renaissance was beginning. How did you see it changing the way people thought about cocktails, the way they ordered, the way bartenders thought about what should go into that glass?
Well, it's interesting. When I started, I wasn't a professional bartender. I was a musician doing a lot of travel, and I was what we would now call an enthusiast, which there are many, many of. But then we were a small group, and there were a couple of bartenders who were also in that sort of club, and it was the great Dale DeGroff down in New York City who was sort of bringing things back. And the Rainbow Room famously launched a program that we all were just in awe of. But mostly you were looking up in books for lost, and the ingredients were lost, and the techniques had been lost, and we were just sort of fumbling around for many years just trying to do better drinks.
Jenna, could you feel that people had lost capacity here? Was there a time when we were all fumble-fingered and sort of unsophisticated when it came to cocktails?
You know, Tom, I came in a little late to the game, but thinking back on, I think that right now for the consumers, definitely, it's also about relearning how to drink and how to enjoy drinking. Because, like, I think about when I turned 21 and you go to a bar because that's the exciting thing to do, and having no idea what I would get or what anything was.
And so have a
how
beer,
much has changed.
Know?
Yeah, I guess I'll have a beer then. But how much has changed and how people are learning more because all this coming back. And I think that that's really exciting.
Can you feel it across the bar? Do you have a more educated, a more sophisticated customer coming in now with, you know, elaborate orders on their mind?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. People are asking for things that they never would have asked for even 5 years ago.
Andre, what have you seen across the course of this renaissance when it began? What kind of cocktails were people ordering? And as it's deepened and evolved and maybe spread out, where's the edge now?
I would say in the beginning, the poster child for the resurgence was probably the Manhattan, basically because it's a very simple drink, bourbon or rye and vermouth. And you could really tell in the beginning who was on their game by what kind of Manhattan they were serving you. And I would say over the time, one of the biggest changes I've seen is a return or emergence of bitterness as a flavor. And so now very popular is something like a Negroni or a Boulevardier. So there's a real...
Define these as you name them. Not everybody's into this world.
Right. So Negroni is gin, Campari, vermouth. And a Boulevardier replaces that with bourbon. So it's a very popular drink right now. Essentially, you know, Campari or Aperol-based drinks have a real bitterness to them. So the medicinal quality has sort of come out in cocktails, I would say, in the last 3 to 5 years.
Is that a compliment, a medicinal quality? Is that an attractive feature?
Well, it certainly enlivens the senses.
Hey, James, Jackson, sorry, why cocktails? I mean, why not just a beer or a good glass of wine?
Oh, it's a unique Epicurean American art form. And even in the dark times was something of fascination. I grew up in a household where Hemingway loomed large. And in literature, the cocktail's place is kind of as a very quintessentially American accent to sort of style, lifestyle even.
Yeah.
You know, Prohibition had done a tremendous amount of damage to that culture, demonized it, and we'd lost a lot of talent. But there are lines you can trace through that. Even though it wasn't a golden age by any means, the torch was sort of carried through all these decades, even into the cocktail era of vodka and such in the 80s.
Andre, an American Epicurean art form? Is there something particularly American about cocktails?
There really is. I would say that along with jazz, it was one of the improvisational things that America gave to the world. It's really tied up. You see the cocktail emerging with the American Revolution. This idea to serve an individual drink, a bespoke drink to a common person was a radical idea. And it sort of took form from there as America's technologies grew, as we got ice in the 1830s, as we got the ability to make straws, say, for sherry cobblers. This sort of inventiveness and riff on these combinations is really uniquely American.
Ice and straws, and you're into an American ingenuity realm there. We are going to make and share some of the expertise of my guests in this hour. We are going to sip very, very lightly, and we've got some virgin options here as well. But we've got an East India cocktail already magically made for me on the studio tabletop, and it's one of your suggestions, Andre. Why an East India cocktail to speak to the cocktail renaissance?
Well, one of the interesting things about the East India cocktail, it appears, I believe, in print first in 1882. It's sort of in the post-Civil War boom is sort of when the golden era of cocktails, the technology and the economy sort of all came together. And East India is fascinating because it shows a global economy in a glass. There's French cognac, Curacao from the Caribbean, pineapple, tropical pineapple, nutmeg from the Far East. This is a cocktail that shows that when people could get their hands on exotic ingredients, they would, and then the United States, they would put it all together in a glass.
And orange curacao in here as well. First sip of the day. Here we go. East India cocktail, the world in a glass. Ooh. Okay, that's very fine indeed, and I can taste it just spices up and down. I mean, it's just rich, rich, rich with tropical and more global flavors right there. You're right.
It's a fascinating drink.
Who drank it and when?
It appears in a bar manual in 1882. It would have probably been the rage in New York, but probably then on to New Orleans, Chicago, anywhere where fine spirits were being served.
Jenna, if I come into your bar and order an East India cocktail, how do you size me up?
That's someone that might have be a little familiar with some cocktails.
And like that rich, spicy flavor. It's almost like spice balls. I don't have the language here, but it's a nutmeg and spice bomb, and you can definitely taste the pineapple going on in there. Is it something that's ordered often in your realm, Jackson?
It's occasionally ordered. It's more likely to maybe appear on a small menu of resurgent cocktails, and you know, it's a set of flavors that. Are very easy for people to order if you do put it in print. And that's one thing that's been happening a lot more lately is people are more willing to kind of just read along with, you know, what it is you want to offer and pick something that way.
Nothing crazy in there. We're going to get a little bit crazy in this hour. Mushrooms may come into play and a whole lot more. This is terrific. We're talking about America's return to the romance of the cocktail. Biddy Carter behind us right here. Wine is fine. Craft beers are great. But there's a lot happening behind the bar these days and a cocktail culture that's really obsessed with it. This is On Point.
Most any afternoon at 5. We'll be so glad we're both alive. Maybe fortune will complete our plan that all began with cocktails for two.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we are talking this hour about America's return to the romance of the cocktail. Jazz and cocktails, uniquely American offerings to the world, says my guest Andre Darlington, joining us from Madison, Wisconsin, co-author of the new The Cocktail Hour. You can find cocktail recipes from all of our guests and a link to the book at our website, onpointradio.org. Jackson Cannon is with me in the studio, co-owner and bar director at the Hawthorne, great bar in Boston, also bar director at Eastern Standard. Jenna Rycroft is here, principal bartender at Number 9 Park in Boston, also just a terrific place. We're going to hear in a few minutes from Justin Lavenue from Austin, Texas, Eater's 2015 Bartender of the Year with a pretty exotic cocktail to share with us. You can join us as well. Are you now into the cocktail culture? Are you practicing on weekends at home? Are you into flips and fizzes and slings and juleps and sours and cobblers and rickies? Are you kitted out with the strainers and shakers and muddlers and all the rest? Do you have a signature drink? Tell us. It's funny. I get a lot of people responding already. Ari in Vermont says, men don't drink cocktails. Well, I'm afraid they do.
Oh, come on, Ari. Real men drink pink cocktails.
Okay.
We know that
okay.
True.
Zanti Misfit says, if you never drink, you'll never become an alcoholic. This is quite true. I'm all for very responsible drinking. And it's certainly, I am anything but a big drinker. But some of these flavors are just too good to avoid. Damian Mendocino says, the squat cobbler is his go-to. I don't know. And Inez says, a bourbon old-fashioned, no extra water seltzer, just let the ice melt, good bitters, gourmet cherry. We'll give you a twist on that before we're finished here today, Inez. Jackson, can you take us right into a little instruction here on the very basics?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the exciting things these days is people want to learn to make some of these things at home. So two of the very basic cocktails, the gin martini and the daiquiri, you set both of those up. We like to stir those clear spirit drinks, not shake them. James Bond's trying to get extra water in his drink so he can keep his adversaries at bay.
Ah.
And we're not going to do a strawberry daiquiri, but we are going to do a little twist on it. We're using the Bully Boy gin, Bully Boy rum from right here in Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Fresh lime juice, sugar, and a little bit of Peychaud's bitters from New Orleans.
Okay. So this is the daiquiri front. You can hear the, we've got the ice. We've got the whoa, yeah, we're there.
And we're gonna shake this to make very sure that we get it cold, diluted, and properly sort of aerated so it's alive when
so
you see it.
The martini you're gonna stir, but the daiquiri, we're definitely shaking. Now you've got the big chunks of ice right in there.
Only the best for you, Tom.
Yeah, I appreciate that. This is not that kind of, what do you call it, the ice that comes out of the machine at the cinema that's all, like, turned into a mush. These are cubes.
We can make that work if we have to, but this is this stuff's a little bit better for what we're doing. Get it nice and cold with not too much water, just the right amount.
And what's the flavor of the daiquiri that you're serving up here again?
I'm going to let you tell our friends what you think, but we call this a DTO or daiquiri timeout. And again, it's with a beautiful local rum, Bully Boy, made right here in Boston. So Peychaud's bitters, lime juice,
and sugar.
You've got
a strainer over the shaker as that comes out so you don't have big chunks of anything coming in here.
Slide it to you, my friends.
And I've got a Pink Beauty right here, and it's been shaken. And I can't believe this is my job. Ooh, that is fine. That is fine. Tell me.
Tom, we say that every day.
White rum, fresh lime, simple syrup, and Peychaud's bitters. Is that in here this time?
Yeah, for a cocktail to be a cocktail, it should have spirit, water, sugar, and bitters.
We've got everything going. We've got a martini.
I want you to give this a try. Can you try and stir that for me, Tom? Watch.
I'm going to stir this. Yeah, we're getting onto martini country now.
Nice smooth movement there.
Oh, you want it sort of like a very classy science experiment.
Yeah, you should be able to hear it, but not.
Ooh, but yours is much smoother than mine. I don't know. You got something in the wrist.
Something I'm passionate about. We'll spend some time after the break.
I need stirring lessons after the break. I clearly don't make enough cocktails.
My thing is, we can also a button. We should all be able to stir a martini.
Show me how you do it again. Yours is so smooth and cool looking. Jenna, give us a little color commentary on the craft as demonstrated here by Jackson. How's he doing?
He's doing great. I think the idea is, and you don't do that overnight, so don't feel bad about that, Tom.
Okay.
However, you're trying not to rustle around the ice and add more air than is necessary.
Is everything in there for the martini? You got the gin and the vermouth in there, and that's what you're stirring together?
Absolutely, and we've got a touch of orange bitters in there as well.
And you're saying...
And we're going to serve this with an olive and a little lemon oil over the top. A lot of people don't like to be told how to take their martini. They sort of call a brand and call it dry. So I'll put this on the menu as an Astoria, and then people are willing to try it.
Okay, it's come to this. There's a beautiful martini being served on my studio table. And tell me exactly what is in here again now so people at home who don't have the drink being pushed across the table can visualize what's just gone on.
2 ounces of Ford's gin with an ounce of Dolan Dry Vermouth, a touch of Regan's Orange Bitters. Mm-hmm. Stirred with an olive in and a little lemon oil over the top.
Oh, that is so not a junky martini. That is so – why does that taste so much better than what I so often taste and say?
We started to remove the vermouth in the dark times from the martini, and it's it's a very important ingredient. It's full of all kinds of those savory notes that you're getting right now.
There's the fruit notes coming like plenty up off of this, but it's clean in a way that's hard for me to.
This scales up very well too. You can do this by the bottle into a pitcher and just have it set for an afternoon.
And that's all right. You can just leave it in the freezer, I guess, once you've done that and have it.
There's something about them being just kind of made and served, but yeah, you can definitely figure out a way to stretch it through the afternoon.
Jenna Martinez, when people belly up to your bar, where are they on the hierarchy of cocktails ordered these days?
You know, I mean, a martini is such a versatile thing. I mean, people still have very different expectations of a martini depending on where they're coming from.
Like what? What's the range?
Well, we came from a time period where a martini usually meant just like vodka shaken with maybe like it looked at vermouth once and thought about it.
Yeah.
However, what Jackson's prepared for you is a much more classic rendition of a dry martini. So people are looking for something everywhere in between still at this point.
What makes it dry, Jackson?
Less vermouth.
Okay, less vermouth, drier martini. Andre, you're listening from Madison.
But we should be drinking wetter martinis. While I have the microphone.
Okay. Why? You want more flavor?
More flavor, less alcohol, and a better experience in every way. More versatile, more complementary to food, more historically accurate, if that's your thing. For every reason, culturally, we should be making the martini wet again.
Andre, what's hot in your neck of the woods these days? Do you have martini drinkers out there, and do they come in with an understanding of what makes a really good one? Do they know the difference?
Sometimes. Our neck of the woods is we're the home of the old-fashioned, or at least where the old-fashioned has reigns supreme. So we do drink a lot of old fashions in Wisconsin, but we do also have a lot of martinis. I think a lot of people know sort of the original martini, which is called the Martinez. And so you will have people ordering them wet, as you say, with a higher ratio of vermouth to the base spirit.
I am sipping so lightly here. It's a way I like. I don't like to knock them back at all. But some of these flavors are just so great. We're going to get an old fashioned of a different sort up here in just a second. We got people calling in as well. I want to bring them in. Jason in Somerville, Massachusetts. Jason, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Tom. Great show today, as always. I'm a big cocktail aficionado, and you have some really fantastic panelists there. I recognize a number of the top bars in Boston. I wanted to give a shout-out to Back Bar in Union Square, which for me is my local, and I've just learned so much hanging out with those folks. You know, I have to say, you go in and you let them be artists. And you know, I'm one of those sort of annoying types who likes to not order off the menu, and I'll give them an emotion, and I'll say, this is the sort of day I had today. Make me something, you know, make me something that would have fit in 1927. And
Jason, we don't find that annoying at all. We love that. We love that about you.
Well, they don't have a back bar either, so that's good.
So if
it's
you...
A culture. It's a very relaxing culture, and it's a very, you know, high level, you know, you meet interesting people. It's top notch. I really enjoy it, and the history behind it, you know, can't be beat.
That's pretty great, Jason. And you've come around. Do you try this at home, Jason, or is it all for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I collect obscure ingredients and little things to, you know, pour with and all that stuff. I'm completely self-taught, but it's amazing how much you can learn just on your own, especially when you have good people guiding you.
What a great...
People are some of the friendliest people around.
We can hear the recipe for obsession right there, and I just mean with all the sort of all the equipment and the ingredients and the very subtle flavors and the whole world that goes into it. We get one more right here from Omaha, Nebraska. Pat, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Pat. What are you into?
I have a question. I like to sip a drink, and so I've got a drink where I put a shot of good bourbon. I use Jim Beam Black, and then some amaretto, and a little of tonic water, or sometimes I'll use just even a little bit of vermouth, just to change it a bit. But mm-hmm. I don't know what that's called.
Let's give it a name right here, right now. I don't know.
What street did you grow up on?
Yeah.
What's the name of the street you grew up on?
I was going to go with Black Little. Amaretto.
Okay, Black Amaretto's got a vote here right now. Pat, thanks for that. There's a recipe. What do you think, Jenna?
You know, there is a drink that now it's escaping me, the name of it, that I'm familiar with that I believe is bourbon and amaretto, almost split. But his addition of tonic and or said splash of vermouth definitely denotes an original.
Where does that take it? Does that add up to you, or are you like, oh, that's breaking some kind of cocktail law of Moses?
No, not at all. You know, and I hope that people – I often feel that people come to the bar and they feel intimidated, or they feel scared to ask for or say what they drink at home, and they feel embarrassed about it. And honestly, it really comes down to drinking what you enjoy drinking, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
We had a vote from Madison, from Andre, for an old-fashioned. You've got a – what do you call it? A Oaxacan old-fashioned. What makes it a Oaxacan?
Oh, it's a – so it's a Oaxacan. Oaxaca is the state in Mexico. That mezcal is sort of – this production of mezcal is centered in. This is a cocktail, kind of a newer classic. That's why I wanted to bring it in.
Old-fashioned is classic as it gets.
Old-fashioned is the definition of a cocktail. So that is your most basic.
And remind us the traditional ingredients.
Spirits, bitter, sugar, water.
Boom.
And that's before you know, we have a version that's pretty popular still, where people muddled fruit. Long before that, that was all it was. It was very basic.
And the spirits, you're going to go to tequila and mezcal, but that would not traditionally be tequila.
No, you know, I think tequila didn't really pick up popularity until, again, Prohibition, post-Prohibition, when people had to look somewhere else to find spirits.
You've got the ingredients. Let's do it. Oaxacan Old Fashioned, Jenna.
All right. Well,
all right.
I
Jenna brings a glass to the table. There's brown liquid in it.
I prepped it up.
Why brown?
It's actually, you know what it is. So what we have here is it's comprised of a base of mezcal as well as tequila, but it's reposado, which means that it's somewhat aged, slightly aged. That gives it a little bit of color.
Tequila takes on color as it ages.
Exactly. And then this also has inclusion of Angostura bitters, which is a dark orange, and a little bit of mole bitters.
Mole bitters, so you really get into some Mexican flavor right there.
Yeah, it kind of, you know, the original recipe, it's by bartender, a great bartender named Phil Ward out of New York City, about 2008, I believe. Mm-hmm. His recipe did not call.
The biggest ice cube I've ever seen.
It did not call for mole bitters, but it's kind of a natural thing that happened to the drink, it seems like, over time. Mezcal, especially, and tequila have some natural chocolate flavors that just kind of accentuates it.
So the mole gives us a little chocolate. The Angostura bitters give us that. Describe that flavor.
Angostura is going to be spice, kind of those warm spices that you were alluding to that you found in the daiquiri, and definitely like some orange citrus flavors. And it's just as a one thing that's why it's retained its popularity and it's used in so many drinks is it really kind of acts as like a binder. It really has a really great ability to just kind of bring all of the ingredients together.
And the sweet here is going to come from what?
We use agave nectar in this.
Okay, so we're going very Mexicano here.
Que Mexicano.
We'll push it across the table because the customer is
Let's give it a burning little something.
What are we doing?
It looks like I'm angry, but I'm not.
You got a match. You're burning an orange peel.
I am doing a flamed orange twist.
Okay, I'm such a newbie. Okay, so you have just held a flame to an orange peel, and then you have rubbed that around the rim of the glass.
So the oils that are in citrus are flammable, as you saw. When I light it, it gives it just a little bit of smoke flavor. So it just adds a little bit extra depth and another aspect to the drink.
Serve her up. That is an amazing series of steps there. And we have an Oaxacan old fashioned. The whole burned or smoked thing you get right away, right along with the. There's so many layers to this. Mm-hmm. There's so many. That is wonderful. First the flame and the tinge of smoke, and then the citrus to orange right behind that, and then right on down with tequila. Of course, you get all these depths in there too. Wow, that is really fantastic. What kind of man or woman orders an Oaxacan old-fashioned?
You know, I think it's really a great go-to for someone. You know, if you think about classic tequila drinks, obviously you're going to go
to got soul. That's
the margarita cool. pretty mm-hmm. quickly, which mm-hmm. is like a shaken with citrus. And this is for someone who wants to have something to sip on and doesn't really know where to go to, but they are interested in enjoying agave.
Andre, again, you're listening from Madison. Give us the Madison perspective on what we've just been served.
Oh, I think the Oaxacan old-fashioned is indicative of just how much fun we're having behind the bar taking classic drinks and adding some smokiness to them. There's a riff on that drink called a Oaxaca in the Clouds. So it's all just puns and cleverness all around it and a delicious flavor and then a little wow with the flamed peel.
Wow, but once again, as with your East India, this is also a cultural collision or merger or – yeah, and there's just so much going on here. It's more than just something to drink. I'm drinking history and culture and lots of cultural references here, Andre.
It's true. It's, one of the great things about cocktails is that there's not only this aesthetic experience that you're getting in the drink, but also a real connection to people that have drunk the drink before you or, you know, a community of people who have come up with clever drinks like the Oaxacan Old Fashioned, which really speaks of a time and place. It speaks of late 2000s New York.
We are speaking to the cocktail renaissance today. Andre Darlington is with us. He's author of the terrific new book on all this. You want to know how to make this happen? The new Cocktail Hour is your book. It's out in April. Joins us from Madison, Wisconsin. Jackson Cannon is here, co-owner, bar director at the Hawthorne, director at Eastern Standard, and Jenna Rycroft from Number 9 Park in Boston, principal bartender there, with us as well. Feist with Brandy Alexander behind us, and you can join us. Are you kitted out with everything it takes to do this at home? Do you have a signature drink, an amazing concoction? What's it say about your tastes, about you? What do you think has brought cocktails back, got people so into the arcana of cocktails again? We're going to do some more incredible tasting here. Stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Brandy Alexander, Brandy Alexander.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about America's return to the romance of the cocktail and sipping very, very lightly here as we do. Wine is fine. Craft beers are terrific. There's a lot happening behind the bar and a cocktail culture that's really obsessed with it these days. We're looking into that with Andre Darlington, author, co-author of the new book, The Cocktail Hour. You can find a lot of recipes from all of our guests at our website, onpointradio.org. Jackson Cannon is here from the Hawthorne and Eastern Standard. Jenna Rycroft from Number 9 Park in Boston. You can hear all kinds of fun reference to cocktails. These Portlandia, you may have heard this back in the day. Co-creators Carrie Brownstein and Fred Armisen go to a bar. They meet a mixologist, drink maker, played by Andy Samberg. Here's Samberg describing the drink he's just made.
That is a ginger-based bourbon drink infused with honey, lemon, and charred ice.
Wow.
Then building off of that base, we've got cherry tomato, lime zest. I actually made the bitters myself at home.
Wow.
We've got egg whites, eggshell, egg yellows, rotten banana.
It adds to, like, the flavor of it?
Secret of the pros, yeah. Also, we're just trying to get rid of it.
So my bar keeps are rolling on the floor in here. You can go way off the deep end here, and there's another little bit of, in that vein from Comedy Central's Broad City. Two women in their 20s, Abby and Ilana, go to a party and order cocktails.
What can I get you?
What are the drinks?
The West Nile Colada is very popular, but I would recommend the Sex Trafficking on the Beach or the Tsunami Slide.
Well, I guess then I will have two Tsunami Slides. Even though that name, I think, is a little bit ridiculous.
Well, 6% of the proceeds go to the tsunami.
What tsunami?
Whichever one happens next.
Okay. It's our ersatz cocktail hour, and the jokes are kind of ridiculous, but they're fun too. Charred ice, that's a little beyond my experience.
I thought I was the only one that used rotten bananas.
Very, very popular.
Oh, that's Secret of the Pros, and we're just trying to get rid of them.
I want to bring in a guest from Austin, Texas. Justin Lavenue is with us, owner of the Roosevelt Room in Austin. He won the Bombay Sapphire Gin Competition, National Craft Cocktail Throwdown, advancing to global finalist for Most Imaginative Bartender. He was named Eater's 2015 Bartender of the Year, and he's got a recipe that kind of blew my mind. Justin Lavenue, thanks very much for joining us today from Austin, Texas.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Would you please take us into this poet's muse, sir?
Absolutely. So the drink was, as you said, created for the Bombay Sapphire Most Imaginative Bartender Competition, in which the Bombay Sapphire, and sponsored by GQ, they're looking for very challenging flavors that really dare your palate to kind of pick it apart. So,
but I mean, you're all the way into, I'm looking at the recipe here, and you've got 30 shiitake mushrooms in here chopped. And help us. What is this?
So the drink itself is inspired by Japanese haiku.
Of course.
The drink itself kind of all revolves around haiku poetry and using Japanese flavors and Japanese bartending techniques. Now, the Japanese are the ones that discovered the fifth element of flavor, umami, and thus shiitake mushrooms really hits that part of your tongue, hence we're using it as a tincture in that drink.
Meaning you're sort of chopping and boiling these down or until you've got some essence of umami.
Yes, so a tincture, a strongly flavored in macerated alcohol, usually used in small portions, just to get a little bit of flavor, almost like bitters are used. So just a touch of this shiitake mushroom tincture, in which we're roasting the mushrooms and then adding a little Bombay Sapphire to that to pick up its flavor and create the tincture.
Okay, so we got mushrooms. Now I'm also looking here at pistachio milk and take us on vanilla beans and green tea powder.
Exactly. Like I said, I mean, a lot of the cocktails that get submitted and win competitions are challenging their flavors. They're creating beauty through complexity, and a lot of that is often sparking intrigue on the tongue. So when you have a drink that's not only really well-balanced but also challenges every part of your tongue and hits every part of your tongue, hence the umami tincture, the pistachio milk is meant to kind of, you know, coat your tongue, but it's also a very lively shaken drink, so it also dances on at the same time.
Wildflower honey, cinnamon sticks, anise pods, vanilla bean, green tea powder, yuzu concentrate. What is yuzu?
Yuzu is a citrus found in Asia, and has a very nice floral note with kind of flavors of grapefruit, lemon, orange, kind of like a hybrid almost of a fruit and the common citruses that we know today.
And then, of course, we've got the gin here and lots of lime juice. When you put all this together, do I feel like I'm in a Japanese tea house, or what's the suggestion?
I think the drink itself, the drink one, I think because it, like I'm saying, it's hitting every part of the tongue. Mm-hmm. You're picking out different notes of everything that's in it with every sip, and with every second that goes by, you're going to start picking out new flavors in it itself. And, you know, I think the judges were impressed because when the ingredients were actually listed out, it forms a haiku.
Yes, we saw a little Bombay Sapphire Gin, Poet's Cordial, Yuzu Lime Blend. We're in haiku territory. And when you're all done with that drink and you've been up the mountain of Himalayan salt and all the rest, you've also got a kind of Zen temple chill out on the other side. What's that?
So it's kind of funny. I mean, obviously with competition drinks, you're kind of going above and beyond, really trying to impress these judges that have really seen it all in a lot of senses. So presentation plays a very important factor when you're actually presenting the drink to the judges. So the drink was served on a Zen garden, the sand of which was made with citric acid, baking soda, and sugar. And opposite the drink was a little palate cleanser of water, quinine water, a little Bombay Sapphire, and cucumber juice. And what the judges did, they took a little bit of the sand, put it into their little palate cleanser and made a gin and tonic, essentially, to cleanse their palate, and then they went into the drink.
Justin, while you've been describing this, we've all changed into yukata kimono, and we're all sitting down to meditate over this. Wow, competition drinks, that is way out there. Justin Lavenue, we got more drinks to make, but just hearing you describe that was terrific for us. The poet's muse, Justin Lavenue at the Roosevelt Room in Austin. Thank you for sharing that, Justin.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Garth in New Orleans is calling. Garth, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Tom. Where you at? How's your mama and them?
My mama at the moment is doing just fine. Everything's just fine. Maybe finer than it should be at this hour. What do you know, Garth?
Well, groovy. Maybe I think she might need a Sazerac. That's Sazerac. I worked at world-famous Arno's restaurant. Y'all might remember
Yes.
Folgers coffee commercial.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, well, I'm a captain there. It was a very formal service situation. We wore tuxedos and all that. And not only was I a captain there, but also for a time I was a bartender. I was a service bartender. And let me tell you what, brother, man, it is tough to pour against a computer cleaner. It goes, and that's an 8-top. And it's Sunday brunch, and there's mimosas, and I had to get there 2 hours ahead of time.
But Sazerac is your fave, Garth. You're a Sazerac man.
It is my fave, yes, and I will tell you the recipe. Now, because it's a restaurant, it has to be, everything has to be prepared. You have to have a bunch of cold, regular old-fashioned glasses.
Okay.
You have to have chilled simple syrup, chilled old overholt rye whiskey. Now, you may go into these stores and see Sazerac and it's already made. Don't do that.
Okay.
No. So what you do is you take a cold glass and you rim it with an Herb Saint flavored liqueur, Pernod, or they actually have absinthe nowadays.
Yep.
So you rim it, you spin that, you shake the excess out, you hit it with a dash of simple syrup, and then 2 ounces of old overholt rye whiskey, and then a twist of lemon, and rim the glass, and that is it. And when it comes to simplicity, that basically is the deal.
Does happiness reside there, Garth? A certain kind of on-the-tongue happiness?
It does. It's it's a brown liquor. I mean, you know, a lot of people say, well, you don't serve that to ladies. I remember several famous actresses that came into the restaurant. I think I even served Harry Shearer, fabulous comic commentator.
Garth, we love the whole report. My bartenders are ready to serve brown liquor to whoever orders it, I think, at this end of the microphone. And I'm so glad to hear from New Orleans. Of course, great cocktails out of New Orleans. We've got drinks to make right here. And I see eggs on the table
Tom,
now.
It should be a requirement that everybody in America go to New Orleans and enjoy a Sazerac there. It's one of the greatest
Here's the Sazerac in New Orleans. Here's just plain New Orleans. Eggs. What are we doing now? I'm out of my depth.
We're each going to make an egg cocktail, fairly common ingredient in the Golden Age. Something that when the Renaissance was on, we brought them back on the bar, and that was an ingredient that really got a lot of people's attention. There's something about seeing it in the glass before it's mixed.
It's going to be a raw egg, I see.
Well, when it goes in, it's going to be cooked with alcohol and citrus in some cases. But a great place to kind of take somebody who is a little scared of this whole thing. They see it happening, and then they taste it, and they see, wow, what an impact on texture an egg can have. So,
I see a tall glass. I see a kind of a light brown here.
So I'm gonna do a flip. Jenna's doing a more classic whiskey sour.
Do we have room to do a flip here?
We can do them both at the same time.
Gymnastic flip? What do you mean by a flip?
Well, that's just the term given when you use a whole egg in a cocktail.
Okay. So what are we making in your glass here, and what's in there with that egg?
So this is the Colleen Bond. This is a really great cocktail. Most of us learned out of the Flowing Bowl book. It's a whole egg with Benedictine chartreuse and rye whiskey. Okay. These are no additional sweeteners in there, just the cordials doing that work.
Benedictine tastes like what? It's
think of sort of honey and some nuts and berries.
Okay.
Chartreuse being very floral. We're using yellow chartreuse. These are great old classic cocktail ingredients.
And rye whiskey. Okay.
I'm going to shake this a couple of ways up, get it in the glass, and then top it with nutmeg. So you really have – you'll see the kind of connection in all these kind of flavor notes kind of world travel in a glass.
I want to see how you do this. You're gonna flip this. So I can still see the yolk down in there. It's upside down glass against a silver shaker.
So that's what we call sometimes a dry shake.
Bang.
There's
not that long.
Minor debate about that, but I like to get these all mixed in before I get the ice on them.
Oh Lord! And this is my job.
Okay.
All right, we're shaking. Shaking. And I see Jenna's at the ready as well. Jenna, while he's shaking, tell us what you've got coming here. This is just a good old whiskey sour.
I'm doing a whiskey sour, but I threw in an egg white.
Is that standard? Is that traditional?
You know, I think that at one point it is a lot. We serve it either way, depending on how people ask for it. But
it's going to have more body with that egg white.
It's going to have a really cool – this is just with the egg white, not the whole egg. It's going to have a really cool layer of white foam on top. It's almost going to look like a latte.
Andre Darlington and Madison, are you approving of what you're hearing from that distance?
Absolutely. Egg cocktails are some of my favorite. They're just a texture wonderland.
I mean, I can see velvety coming here or something like that. Maybe
absolutely. They're velvety. They have an incredible mouthfeel. They're amazing. Egg and the lemon together somehow balance each other out. It's like a liquid cake.
There is such a cocktail fest going on here. I can't believe. What are you doing there, Jackson?
Just shaving a little fresh nutmeg over the top of this, something
shaving
we really like
fresh
to do.
Fresh nutmeg. So is this like eggnog territory? Okay, so this is a Colleen Bond.
A bit like eggnog, but lactose free, my friend.
Oh my gosh. And you've got the nutmeg on top. All those. That's very rich. It does taste almost like there's dairy in there, but there's not. It's just the egg and the alcohol working together.
And the sugar is only coming from the ingredients as well. So
that's incredible. You could spend a very happy hour just working your way down through that. Take it slow. No reason to do a lot here. And you are opening up something that looks very like tincture of I don't know what. It looks like you're going to put, you know, iodine on something here.
I assure you it doesn't need too much extra salt. I'm going to my old friend Ingo Stir again, but if I use a dropper, you'll see that I have a little bit more control.
More like
over it.
This is a tall stemmed glass, and you're putting little drops of the Angostura on top out of something that looks like a medicine bottle. And now with a toothpick, you are connecting the dots. That's what they all say we should do, connect the dots.
This is definitely more for aesthetic here.
All right. I enjoy the aesthetic. It looks sort of like a NASCAR race going on top here of Angostura bitters. And this is just a whiskey sour.
It is. It's real simple. Super basic sour with whiskey as the base. So it's just lemon, sugar, whiskey, and an egg white.
You know, I feel like I'm sitting with years and years of history there. I mean, that just, it's a flavor that takes you back. I don't know who drank that, where, and when, but it was a long time ago and far, far away. That is really delicious. That's beautiful. I mean, look, Khalid, West Hartford, Connecticut, you're on the air. What do you think, Khalid? Does this all make sense to you?
Hi, Tom. I've been a bartender for the past 10 years, a member of the Bartenders Guild. The beautiful thing about our industry is the renaissance of the last 8 years. I guarantee I'm one degree away from every from your guests here. Love Naomi at Eastern Standard. The company Best Door from Wisconsin. I mean, our whiskey starting to come from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
One of the challenges I've found is while the world of craft is infinite, the bottom line of numbers in restaurants can be finite. The time we have to explain to guests can be finite. And I just want you gentlemen and ladies to talk about the challenges of the reality of people having, you know, not geeking out, if you will, as much over cocktails, but making them a cocktail enthusiast for the time that they're in their bar. And this show is so on time. I'm having all my guests listen to it. There's been so much information given without snark. And that's been an issue in the industry, and I just applaud the panelist and the host.
Khalid, you're terrific. We're snark-free in our pleasure and fascination with this right here. But I do see – we've had an hour, and there's so much to get across. And Khalid, how do you do it? Because the bottom line is you've got to move some liquor if you're in the business.
He's right about that. You need to have quick conversations. You need to ask people what they're into. You need to win their trust. You can do that on the menu. You can do that in conversation. It's worth the time that you take to do it, because those are the best guests. And he mentioned the bottom line. The business is really built on those relationships.
Party in a studio today, and what a pleasure just to see the range, the sophistication, the nuance of these flavors. We've been all the way from shiitake mushrooms to you name it, and I'm so grateful to all of you for helping us do it. Jenna Rycroft, principal bartender at Number 9 Park, I cannot thank you enough for bringing all this in. Thanks very much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been
Jackson
great.
Cannon, you're terrific as well. The Hawthorne and Eastern Standard, what a beautiful genius and expertise, and I can feel it, love you bring to this. Thanks a lot for that, Jackson.
Thank you very much, Tom. See you in the bar.
Okay, maybe. And Andre Darlington, yeah, I'd like to. Andre in Madison, Wisconsin, co-author of the new Cocktail Hour. It's a terrific book. I should say you can find cocktail recipes from all of our guests at our website, onpointradio.org. Thank you, Andre. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Off we go. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.